Now, CRKC is proud to be the only radio station in the country with a regular astronomy slot. And with clear winter skies and new telescopes unwrapped over Christmas, it's a great time to look up. And joining me, as usual, is David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland. David, you're very welcome and a very happy new year to you, and welcome back.
Yes, it's going to be a fantastic 2026. Loads happening, including this week's.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of telescopes, this one may be a little larger than those who got one for Christmas. A Dublin-born scientist construction of what will be the Worldscope in Chile, the extremely large telescope, and this project is part of a wider expansion. Can you explain what the extremely large telescope is, why it's significant in the astronomy, and what's Ireland's role in its construction? So start with the, tell us about the telescope.
Well, it's a real game changer. I remember when I was growing up, telescopes had gotten bigger and bigger, and they hit about the 5 or 6 meter wide mark. And then they stopped in the sort of 1970s. But new engineering came along and managed to push them up to maybe 8 and 10 meters. And that's been it for the last few decades. But now, the European Southern Observatory, which is a big conglomeration of European countries, that have decided there's enough telescopes in the Northern Hemisphere. Let's put some big ones in the Southern Hemisphere, because you can see a few things down there you can't see from the north. And they're building a 40-meter. So I've stood underneath the world's biggest single telescope. It's 10 meters across. It's in the Canary Islands, belongs to Spain. It was built about 20-odd years ago. And now there's going to be a 40-meter one. So they're just jumping up 1 or 2 meters every decade. They're going from 10 to 40. Now, that's not just 4 times wider. It's got 16 times the light gathering power. Wow. So it is a huge jump in astronomy. And it's going to have what's called adaptive optics. The reason we put telescopes in space is when you're viewing things at high magnification, they shimmer. And all you can see is the shimmer. But in space, there's no shimmer. And it turns out with lasers, you can do a similar thing, very technical, and get rid of that shimmer. So it's almost like having a space telescope. And, you know, think of the biggest space telescope we have, the James Webb Space Telescope, cost 10 billion euros, and it's only 6 meters wide. This one is nearly 7 times wider. We're talking 50 times more light gathering power, and nearly as sharp images will be visible through it. So we can just only imagine what's happening in a couple of years when it comes online.
And David, it being that it's going to be the biggest telescope to date, as you say, 4 times the size of anything existing out there at the minute, and the fact that in the likes of South America, things can be seen that we couldn't see in the Northern Hemisphere, what impact will this have on astronomy?
Well, at the moment, our New Year lecture we'll talk about in a minute is about exoplanets, planets around other stars. And most of them, there's about over 6,000 been definitely identified. We just see them by indirect methods. So as they go around their star, they make the star wobble, and we see the star wobbling. Or they go in front of the star, and we see the star's light drop. But this one, I'm guessing it's around a dozen of those 6,000 directly. But this telescope will be able to see the planets around other stars directly, measure what's in their atmospheres. We're looking for things that only life can really produce, like oxygen or ozone, for instance. That shouldn't be in the atmosphere of a planet. It's very reactive and would vanish very quickly. But life produces lots of it. So that's one of the big things. Of course, you can also see back to the beginning of time. We can now see objects that are so far away, the light left us shortly after the Big Bang happened. And we're already seeing this with the James Webb Space Telescope, which was deliberately designed to peer into that early part of the universe. And this one's 50 times better. It's an incredible engineering feat. This didn't happen decades ago because of lack of money. It was just the difficulty, complexity, and engineering needs of a telescope this size. I mean, if you look it up online, you can read the specifications. It's got hundreds of individual little mirrors all working together. Vast computer system controls them all. Thousands of times a second, the figure, the shape of the mirror has to be adjusted to counteract that scintillation, that shimmering, that wobbling. We just can hardly imagine. And Irish researchers at the forefront. We joined the European Southern Observatory a few years ago. We've been dying to join for a long time. It's leaving the Americans behind, by the way. The next biggest telescope being planned anywhere in the world is a 30-meter, not a 40 like the Europeans have, 30-meter, and that'll be half the power of the European one. And they're actually having problems as to where to locate it. They're having problems with the natives on Hawaii where they wanted to put it. So it looks like the European will be online, bigger, and they'll have years head start on anything the Americans have.
Now, Professor Tom Ray is president of the European Southern Observatory, and he's involved in this construction. What's Ireland's role in this construction? Do you know?
Well, yeah, it's a conglomeration. I can't remember the exact number of countries, between 10 and 20 of European countries, who can't afford a €1.5 billion telescope like the ALT. But jointly we can. And of course they elect their presidents from the member states. And we're delighted that Professor Tom Way ran an article about this at the time, has been elected the president of the European Southern Observatory. So he's the top man in the whole thing. In fact, he was due to give our New Year lecture last month, but had to pull out because of all the work that this brings up. We hope to get him again in the future. He has given talks to us in the past. And Tom Ray has had an incredible career in astronomy. He was the man that, first of all, identified how accurately Newgrange was aligned with the midwinter sunrise, not just now, but 5,000 years ago when it was built, putting aside any idea that it was an accidental alignment. So he's really the man that put Newgrange on the map. And he's done lots of other things as well. He works on young stars, jets coming out of them, all that kind of thing. And on top of all that, he's got all this administrative work of presiding over the not just the ELT. The ESO has four giant 8-meter telescopes and loads of other ones as well. So Ireland can bid for time on these, along with any other astronomer in the member countries. And you get time on them if your science is good enough, not because of the amount of money you've put in. They just want the best science to come out, isn't it? And the Irish are batting above their average at the moment, and the Galway group are helping with this adaptive optic thing that stops the shimmer, so they'll be amongst the first groups that will get time on the telescope. So it's kudos to Ireland all round.
Now, finally, on this particular topic, looking ahead, what opportunities do these major international collaborations open up for Ireland in terms of jobs, research, and potentially even future Irish astronomers or space missions? I mean, is that far-fetched?
Yeah, no, that's the important thing. We're not just spending all this money on the European Southern Observatory every year. We don't just get our researchers being able to apply for time to use the telescope. Irish companies, it's costing €1.5 billion to build this telescope, can bid for contracts to make parts for the telescope itself. So when you're in, you get the jobs, you get the engineering skills, and you get the science down the line as well. So it's a win-win. And, you know, Ireland's economy is based on science. 60% of our GDP is all these technological companies we've got, from internet, chip manufacturers, pharmaceuticals, all of those, has changed Ireland dramatically into a science-based economy. And the powers that be are aware of this, and you need to attract the best minds to train your next batch of engineers and scientists, who will, a lot of those interested in astronomy, will end up with jobs in industry, not just in academia. So it's fantastic for your economy. And, you know, who doesn't believe this coming century is going to be all about technology?
Yeah.
In the past, it was about agriculture and important things like that. I think agriculture is now just over 10% of our GDP. Tourism, about another 10%. 60% science, and everything else fills the other 20%. So you can see science is extremely important to Ireland. So our Minister for Science, James Lawless, has got the most important job in the cabinet, in my opinion.
Mm. Now, David, people who got a present of a telescope for Christmas also got another present, because rarely do we get skies like we've got for the last week or so, and are going to continue to get for the next week or so, it looks like. Now, Jupiter and Saturn are both visible in the evening sky at the moment. For people who got a telescope for Christmas, why is now such a perfect time to start observing them?
Well, because Jupiter, which is the brightest star-like object in the sky, the only thing that's brighter is the moon at the moment, is about 10 times brighter than the brightest star in the sky, so unmistakable. Sitting next to the moon on Saturday night, and not too far the nights before and nights after. So you see it blazing over in the east every evening. And it's at its closest to Earth this month. Technically, it's next weekend, but it doesn't really matter. It's as close today as it will be, give or take a percent or two. You won't notice the difference. So anyone got a telescope over Christmas has had Jupiter to look at, and even a tiny telescope, even binoculars, can pick out its moons. And I've been looking at its great red spot in these clear skies you've been talking about over the holiday period. So if you've got a good telescope, then you'll see the cloud belts on Jupiter, its great red spot. And this month is the best month to watch while it's at its closest, although it'll be pretty good for a few months after that as well. We're even running a Jupiter watch on January 21st.
And I'll come to that. I'll come to that.
For our telescopes.
Now, David, Jupiter is at opposition this week and was recently seen close to a supermoon. First of all, what does opposition actually mean in this context, and why does it make Jupiter such a standout object this month?
Yeah, it's a piece of jargon we astronomers use, but it's actually very simple. Opposition means directly opposite the sun in the sky. So if you're standing facing Jupiter, the sun is directly behind you. Jupiter's above the horizon, so the sun will be below the horizon by the same amount. Or if you imagine looking at the solar system from a great distance, you'll see the sun, the Earth, and Jupiter lined up. And because we're all going around the sun in roughly circles, once Jupiter, the Earth, and the sun are in a line, that means Jupiter is actually as close as it can get to the Earth. Therefore, it's brightest. Therefore, it's biggest in the telescope. And that's why it's a fantastic sight this month during opposition month.
Now, you mentioned there, and this is attention to all people who got a telescope out there. You're hosting a public Jupiter watch and telescope workshop on January the 21st, as you said. What can people expect on the night, especially those who might be a bit intimidated by a new telescope?
Yeah, well, there's two aspects to this event. First of all, Jupiter's there. We have to show people Jupiter in big telescopes, and most people will come along for that. But a lot of people get telescopes for Christmas, especially if it's a surprise gift, and the instructions can be more difficult than assembling a cabinet from one of the furniture manufacturers. Maybe we shouldn't name them. And if you're having trouble, and some people do, they just can't assemble them. They don't understand what goes where because they come in a box broken down into all the individual parts. Then we'll do it for them. And also, if you've done that, but you don't know how to focus it or locate the moon or planets, which a lot of people don't know how to do, then we can show you exactly how to do that. And also, you know, there's lots of knobs and buttons to press and everything else on these telescopes. You don't need to know what they all do, but we can show you the main ones. And if you're wondering what that particular knob does there, we can explain that to you as well. And there's a lot of advanced things that telescopes costing a few hundred euros can do that you may never need. And we can tell you, just ignore that bit till you're an expert later on. And I think one-on-one with somebody who knows telescopes inside out, there are a few members of the society that know a lot about telescopes. We're delighted to help because, you know, you're going to become one of us in the future.
And I take it that night will be at your headquarters there, which is off the M50. Is that correct?
Yeah, so it's easy to get to. You don't have to go into Dublin City. M50 makes it easy access. It'll be 7 p.m. on a Wednesday night, so traffic shouldn't be heavy at all. Ample parking, free tea and coffee to keep you warm, a few snacks as well. But most importantly, some giant telescopes and then some experts to help the newcomers and beginners. And the reason we're doing it on January 21st is exactly 1 week later, our evening classes begin. So you can learn even more about astronomy that way.
Exactly. And we'll be reminding listeners coming up to the 21st about this lecture again. So don't worry if you can't take it all in now. We will be coming back to it in programs between now and then. Now, David, for those without a telescope, there are still some great naked eye sights this week, including Regulus and Spica near the moon. When should listeners look up to catch these moments?
Yeah, and we cover all this in the magazine, things you can see with the naked eye. So Jupiter next to the moon on Saturday night, that's the highlight of the month because that's the brightest thing people are going to see this month. Saturn was near the moon actually on St. Stephen's Day, and we'll do it again later in the month. We'll cover that on the show closer to the week that it actually happens. But the two you'll see this week are Spica, the brightest star in Virgo, and Regulus, the brightest star, Leo. And they're going to get pretty close to the moon. So if you held your fist at arm's length, you would actually easily cover the moon and the star. So the first one is Regulus, brightest star in Leo, and that's just above the moon tomorrow night. So if it's clear tomorrow night, which it looks like it should be around a lot of the country, just look above the moon when it rises. The moon will be up around after 8 o'clock, I think it is. And then you'll see Regulus just sitting above it. If you'd looked at the moon, you might have seen the star accidentally and thought, oh, never seen a star above the moon before. Well, that's Regulus. And then if you like getting up early, because the moon rises later and later, by Sunday morning, you'll have to get up around 3 a.m. And then you'll see Spica, the brightest star in Virgo. And that'll be just above the moon again, as it happens, until dawn. So if you don't like getting up at 3 a.m., but you happen to get up at 7 o'clock or so when the sky's beginning to get bright, you'll see it then. And yeah, there's diagrams for those in the magazine, actually, to show you the view with the naked eye.
Now, and finally, you're kicking off the year with a public lecture on January the 12th. That's this day week, about exoplanets and citizen science. And as we mentioned earlier in the program, exoplanets are going to become very, very real, a lot more, especially with the construction of this new telescope down in South America. First of all, tell us about the lecture, who's giving it, and what's involved.
Yeah, and the holy grail of exoplanets is to find another Earth. Not that we're likely to be able to get there any day soon, but at least if we know there's another planet like the Earth, similar gravity, similar atmosphere, similar conditions, then we know life should probably start on it, just like it did here on the Earth. So that's the holy grail. And there are some survey telescopes that are monitoring stars to detect these exoplanets and producing vast amounts of pictures, images and data that the scientists just can't process on their own. So they set up one of these citizen science projects where you can actually help identify if there's a planet going around this star or not. And indeed, if you've got some amateur equipment, you can actually help with the search as well. So Dr. Oisin Creiner, who's an expert in this area, an Irish astronomer, in fact, he used to work for Astronomy Ireland when he was a student, and now he's got his PhD and a fancy researcher, but he's going to explain things in simple terms to people all about exoplanets to explain, you know, the playing field, and then how people can help. So it'd be a fascinating talk. You don't need any knowledge of science. You know, if you can access the internet to watch the lecture online, then you can certainly help discover planets around other stars. So it should be a fascinating talk on an aspect of exoplanets we haven't actually covered before with one of our lectures, how people can get involved instead of just being bystanders on the sideline watching it.
I mean, this is a real way of ordinary people getting involved in astronomical research, isn't it?
Yeah, it's become very popular, this idea of citizen science. There was a documentary there about the Earth from space in 2025 shown over the weekend. And they were showing how walruses are now being counted by people who are watching satellite images. There's too many satellite images for the scientists involved to count them all, but they've been able to get 38,000 members of the public joined in to help count the walrus population and figure out how well they are doing.
And briefly,
the same can happen with exoplanets.
And briefly, David, where can people get more information?
Yeah, for information on the public lecture, which is next Monday at 7 o'clock, and the workshop, and anything else we're doing, and to join the society, website's all you need, astronomy.ie.
Okay.
And you can, our links to our social media free are there, and if you can afford €1 a week, you can join Astronomy on, get the magazine in the post.
Okay.
And we'll make sure you never miss a thing.
Thanks a million, David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland, for that. That brings us to the end of this evening's programme. Stay tuned.